Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin by taking a look at budgets, financial constraints, talking with kids about budgets and finances, talking with your spouse about them, and maybe talking with your friends about them, too. We can do all that as we visit with Connie Kilmark. Connie's financial counselor, founder of Kilmark & Associates in Madison. Great to have her back. And again, if you have a question or comment for her or an experience to share, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Connie, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
What a pleasure to be here, Larry.
Holidays rapidly approaching. Stress levels are going up. My wife and 8-year-old daughter and grandma have a day off today, and they're shopping for holidays.
Christmas. You know, it's interesting to me because when in my earlier years, I would face Halloween as the beginning of a long train. First would come Halloween with the kids, and then would come Thanksgiving, and then would come Christmas, and then all the significant and then New Year's, and then all the significant birthdays in my life are January birthdays.
Ah!
So I would face this, okay, I need to not only clean the house, but I've got to keep it clean now for like 4 months. So I've always thought of October as the first 2 weeks of October as my last get out of jail free, go for a bike ride kind of time before I had to get sort of serious. But you're right. It's a significant time. And I think because there's so much anxiety among us, so many of us are unemployed. Those of us who are employed are anxious about cutbacks in paychecks or loss of benefits or possibly loss of employment. We're doing more. Our wages are either flat or shrinking. There's a tremendous tendency during a time like this to want to do several things. Protect our children and pretend to them that everything is fine.
Yeah.
And to somehow or another carry out all the traditions. In fact, sometimes we even want to do the traditions that we've always had bigger than they were when, in fact, they might have been more affordable. And I think this is a good time. We're still early enough in October to buckle our safety belts, sit down, and have a really serious conversation with ourselves about how honest is that?
Mm-hmm.
If we're in different financial circumstances, doesn't it seem a little bit like a lie to pretend that everything is exactly the same? And then have the what I call the dark side of generosity come to haunt us in January when what we've done is borrow for all of that sameness when we can't pay for it and then have to worry through January, February, March, April, maybe adding to debt. So I think this is a really good time to say, what can I do with what I have and how can I share the reality of our situation in such a way that my children are not scared by it? And such that they know that there are grown-ups in the playground that are going to take care of making it fine.
Yeah. We have friends who are just really reluctant to talk with happen to have a daughter the same age as ours,
mm-hmm.
8, and they just do not want to talk to their daughter about the tough financial times. They don't want her to worry.
I think that's fair. But you see, the trouble is that the children are very good at picking up body language, tension, anxiety in the household.
Yeah.
If you not only say nothing, but you make it not okay to talk about this, what you've done is set up the same scenario as in a really good horror movie where you make sure that what you've done is suggest that there's something lurking out in the dark, but you don't show it to the audience.
Yes.
And you allow the audience to use their own imaginations to scare themselves to death. Children are decoding their parents' financial actions from the youngest ages. There's good research now that 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds, as soon as they can talk, can already narrate what they think is going on about money. Now, of course, it's inaccurate, but they're creating a story because they're watching us and they're with us in stores and they know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so it is incumbent on us that we give them information having already figured out that we're okay. Give them information and then give them a way to help, especially if there are changes that have to be made. Give them two small things that they can feel big and brave about that they're doing to be helpful.
Hmm.
You know?
What would be an example of a small thing that they could do?
Well, sometimes what I've done with clients is help them with their children by creating a strip, a long strip of paper, and this the child can help with because it's good for them to be interactive. A long strip of paper with a photograph or picture of the house first,
mm-hmm.
and a bag of groceries or the inside of the refrigerator second,
mm-hmm.
and a light bulb third, and maybe a telephone. And so in the order of priority, those things that our money is going to be used to cover. You can take Monopoly money or play money and say, you know, this is where we're going to put it first, second, third, and fourth. And at the end, maybe there's a question mark which says this is the money that's left over and we get to decide what to do with it. A child will say, well, but I want these such and such shoes. And they say, well, maybe we could take the light money and put it over in the shoe money. And you say, well, that could be something that we could do. But, you know, here's what would happen if we did that.
No lights.
And so they begin to get a sense mm-hmm. of the scope of the household. And then you start to say, but, you know, we could save some money on our light bill if when you left a room you turned the light off. Or you didn't run the water when you were trying to wash a dish, that you used some water in the sink and just used a basin.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many practical ways that are just good stewardship that children can get their heads around and contribute. So,
yeah. Well, we have callers, Judy and Bob. Judy, let's go to you first here in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Judy.
I have twin grandsons that are 8 years old, and they are studying money in third grade.
All right.
And I have found that they are much more careful with the money and what they buy if it's money they have to earn themselves, if it's their own money. If it's grandma's money, they go for the really expensive stuff. But if it's money they've had to earn themselves, I found that they are much more careful about what they buy and how much it costs.
Judy, I love what you're saying. I'll tell you a story that complements what you've just said because it gives the child the power and also the meaning of money. I took my kids once on a long trip. We flew out to Portland, and then we drove down the coast of Oregon to all the way to San Francisco. And I knew as a single mom in those years that if I was going to manage this trip, I was not going to keep my temperament very good if I was being asked, can I have this? Can I have this? Can I have this? So I sealed up money for each of them in a separate envelope for each day of the trip. And from that envelope, they would buy their own food and they would buy their own souvenirs.
Ah.
And so when we went into stores, they were doing, as you say, this incredibly serious calculus because in the morning we would open the new envelope and that would be their money for the day. And if they had any left over from the day before, they could keep that. It was amazing how well they, how consciously they tracked, is this a good deal or is this a good deal? It was an entirely and utterly different kind of decision than if some sort of sugar daddy came down from the clouds, as you say, in the form of grandma, and just made it possible. So I'm completely with you.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. Thank you so much, Judy, for calling. We have our daughter. Now, she is on, there are tasks
mm-hmm.
in the house and, mm-hmm. and things, just even personal tasks of getting herself, you know, ready and doing things without having to be told. Every time she does one of those things, there's a magnet of some sort, all different kinds of refrigerator magnets that go up on the refrigerator, and when
like plus points,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
and when they're each worth 10 cents,
mm-hmm.
and so when it gets to be there gets to be 10 of them up there, and those can come off too,
mm-hmm.
they can go the other way.
There's
too.
There's a subtraction or an addition.
Yeah, there's a subtraction or an mm-hmm. addition. When it gets to 10. There's a dollar, and the dollar's for her to goes in her bank.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like the idea of acknowledging that she's constructive and taking care of herself.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of don't like that it's connected to money.
Hmm.
And here's the reason.
Okay.
In later life, no one is going to pay you to get dressed in the morning.
No, it's true.
They're only going to pay you for getting here, and they're going to assume that you've done all that. And the second thing is that you're connecting love and approval and the giving of money, some disappointment or disapproval with the withholding and the subtraction. Mm. And as a result, there's going to be too much emotional power that's going to be braided into money.
Mm.
I might suggest that you separate money from the very excellent way that you want to help her take responsibility for herself, and that the consequences for not might be more naturally occurring from within the not. So mm-hmm. if she doesn't get dressed on time, she misses the bus, or there's some way in
right.
which there's a privilege on Saturday that we would have been able to enjoy together that we can't because Mom and Dad are busy doing what you didn't do during the week. And so I might suggest to our listeners that money be separated out in the same way that we don't make food something you have to earn.
Right.
Because we want them to learn to use it as a neutral tool and not have so much emotion reside in it. Exactly.
That's good. Well, we just started this a week ago, so maybe we can make some adjustments on it.
But there should be an allowance. 80 years old is plenty and good time for money for me, later, and money for sharing, so that she's buying her own presents for friends when there's a birthday party.
Yeah.
And for Christmas, if Christmas is something you celebrate.
Kathy in Jefferson, we turn to you now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you. Great show. We have been in tough times, and 1 year we have a number of children, and we did not have money for Christmas at all,
mm-hmm.
and the money wasn't going to be available until in the middle of January.
Mm.
What we did is made cards, and in the card they got a set amount of money. I can't remember, it might have been $100 because we knew that was what was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put a stipulation with it that they would get this $100 and they could spend 25% of it on toys or items of their choice. And then the rest of it had to be spent on the clothing.
Uh-huh.
But it was their money and they could pick and do as they chose. And it was just amazing. We went for the weekend and went shopping on the designated time. And it was amazing to watch the children and what they wouldn't buy.
Yes.
My son wouldn't even buy toys. He really was so picky. It was amazing. And he was like, I think, 7. And then my one daughter came home with, like, I can't remember, it was 5 or 6 outfits.
Mm-hmm.
And the other daughter came home with, like, 3 or 2 or something.
And both of them had caught, and they had found a way, the 7 outfits she had found a way to buy 7 outfits for the same amount as the other daughter for 3 outfits.
Oh, exactly. And she's to this day is still so frugal. She can make that dollar go farther than anybody I know. The other one isn't. And it's amazing. They're only 2 years apart, and they have 2 different things. But that worked out real well, and they were pleased with it. There was not anxiety about, you know,
right.
We didn't get presents. Well, you are getting presents. You just don't get them on the 25th.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And they were happy with that.
Well, one of the things I really like about what you did was you gave them the power. Along with the money, you gave them the power of choosing and the power of entering the marketplace with the power to make choices.
Mm-hmm.
That's an enormous gift to children.
Yeah.
As they begin to feel their way through comparative, because they can't ever have everything that they want. So the sooner we learn how to make trade-offs, I can have this or I can have that. With a very young child in a supermarket, you can seal up $3 in an envelope and say, this is for the treat for the week. You can spend $3 or $4 on whatever you want. And you will be amazed at what they spend time looking at. Do I want 1 million vanilla wafers or 10 chocolate marshmallow pillow cookies? And they're making the kind of trade-off decisions, a lot of something inexpensive, a little of something that's more precious. And they're developing taste, and they're developing their trade-off capacity, which they mm-hmm. will need later when the credit card companies who are still descend on them and tell them, you don't have to choose, you can have both.
Yeah,
they need to have that built in. So I love the $100 and the envelope. And the fact that you didn't apologize, Kathy, you didn't apologize to them for what you did. You simply said, this is how it is.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Thank you very much for calling. Connie Kilmark, our guest today, as we talk about budgets, financial constraints, talking with your kids about those kinds of things, talking with your spouse about those kinds of things as well. You can join in with your questions and comments. We have open lines to get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or comment there. Larry Mueller here with Connie Kilmark, our producer today, on-air producer, Amanda Magnus, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking financial constraints, budgets, talking with your kids about budgets and financial constraints with our guest, Connie Kilmark, financial counselor, a founder of Kilmark & Associates in Madison. Great to have her with us. She comes by every so often. It's always a pleasure. And I appreciate you listening and phoning in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. And Jessica in Brookfield, up next with a comment or question. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. My question is, I'm wondering if your guests would recommend giving kids money in exchange for doing chores around the house.
Well, we talked a little bit about that with Jeffrey's, Larry's daughter. I would suggest not, and unless it's something that's above and beyond the normal expectations. I would suggest that the expectations of living within the community of the family be something that speaks for itself. We do this because we love each other and we want our family and our household to run smoothly. And because we love each other, we're willing to be considerate and take care of not only ourselves, but each other. If you tie money into that, you begin to have to keep track of things in a commercial way. You've embedded a commercial element into what really is a human relationship gift, a gift economy, the economy of loving one another and of taking good care of oneself. And as a result, I think you introduce an alien element which corrupts the motivation of the child. Is the child doing the getting up in the morning or the taking care of the dishes because it's the right thing to do or because they're making money from it? Which leads then to 12 and 14-year-olds saying, I don't need your money anymore. I can go babysit or I can go to work at McDonald's, a 15 or 16-year-old. This is not what we want to develop. The long-term objective is a child who understands cooperative living and self-responsibility and also, on the side, understands how to use money, which is a neutral tool that does some things very well but doesn't do other things well at all. Mm-hmm. You can't say I love you by giving somebody a whole bunch of money. So yeah. I would say
So what do you do in play? Do you give give the child money then just each week as a...
Exactly, but with an understanding of what they are to cover, which you work out with the child. What do you want to be able to cover yourself? And what do we think you're ready to cover? And give them a little room to make mistakes with it. But then when they make a mistake, if they spend it all on Wednesday and they don't get another allowance again until Sunday... And Sunday is a good day because if you give it on Friday, you've got a 2-day week.
No.
But if you give it on Sunday, you've got a 7-day week. If they spend it on Wednesday, you have to, as a parent, you have to, and I'm really going to emphasize this, you have to sit on your hands and not rescue. Because if you rescue and you say, oh, what a disappointment. I know you want to go to the movies on Saturday. Here's some extra money. What you've done is increase their credit card spending limit instead of teaching them about real limits. So they have to understand that when they make a decision, they've also made an unchoice about whatever else they might have been able to use that money for.
So you don't think providing them money in exchange for chores is analogous to getting paid for your employment as an adult?
I think you don't work for your mother or your father, and your life does not depend on your employer. So I'm going to say that family life is absolutely different from work life. Work life is something that we do in order to support our families. But would you ask your child to buy the elements of dinner at the table? You work in the house, you pick up after yourself, and if you have enough money, then you get to eat a dinner with us, and you pay a nickel for a tomato, and a quarter for a hamburger.
No. Right.
And so you see, it's not a work. It's not fair to the nature of family life to bring the workplace into it. I'm not saying you don't teach kids and give them a chance to learn about money. I'm saying don't make family life the same as paid employment, because it is not only different now, it ought to be always different. Hmm. Family life is parallel to the workplace, but different from the workplace.
Okay, very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we're turning to Sasha in Nina next. Hi, Sasha.
Hi, guys. Well, great show. Thanks. I have two daughters, and about 4 years ago, I opened accounts for them at the bank where they got actually a time card where they could see their balances and they could actually withdraw money from the bank. And I'm grateful that the bank was able to do it. And so basically what 2 years ago, they asked for their allowances to be direct deposited into the bank versus having cash, because they realized that they were spending cash much easier than if it was growing in the bank. Meanwhile, they do have access to it, and perhaps I disagree a little bit. They do have chores, and basically we have a $10 weekly allowance where they have each one of them has to do certain tasks. And if those tasks are not performed up to par, my wife and I, we dock, you know, some money out of the $10, and it could basically go down to nothing. Also, big ticket items. We implemented, they wanted, of course, well, now they're 11 and 13.
The tickets get much bigger at 11 and 13, don't they?
But they are, and you know, and of course, iPods, and they each wanted their own laptop, and I made them a deal. I said, if you save up $250, I'll match the rest of it, and you get the laptop. So they ended up saving up, and and I did take it out of their account, and I purchased them, you know, $700 laptops each. But the quality of care for these laptops that they have bought 3 years ago, you would think that they're brand new. I mean, they take such a good care of those things that they had to fork out money by themselves, that my wife and I basically said, look, when it's time to drive, we're not going to buy you a car. You can buy a car from us. And now they're deciding which car, which one wants to drive. And so it's just funny how they care for things when they have to spend themselves, and it's just amazing. They do not want to have cash on hand because garage sales and candy at the Nina pool. Too much temptation. But when they have it in the bank, you know, my older one, she said, look, I want an iPod. Well, go for it. I mean, she wanted the hunting gun, which is amazing because nobody hunts except her, apparently, now. she had to fork out money for it. I said, well, I'll buy a gun, but, you know, you have to pay for it. And she did. Yeah.
Well, you know, what you're bringing up is how differently we feel the word cost. Cost we sometimes think of as just the price tag on something, but the number that's stated in the store is not really the way we experience cost, because it doesn't matter what it costs if I don't have to think about giving something else up in order to have that. If somebody else is swooping in from the sky and simply transferring ownership from the store to me, then that item had no cost to me. It only costs me something as a human being when I have to give up an opportunity for that candy at the Nina pool or whatever else. And so I'm accumulating value in the object that I'm focusing on by all the choices that I didn't make beforehand that led up to my preserving that money so it was available for that laptop. And so the laptop becomes precious, or the iPod becomes precious, because it represents not just itself, but all the things that I chose not to do in order to have it. It becomes valuable and special in my own, inside myself, in a different way than if it just arrives through the chimney.
There we go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate that call. And Linda in Egg Harbor will turn to you next. Hi, Linda.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I own a I own a seasonal business in Door County that caters to families with children. Mm-hmm. And on my counter, I have a lot of small toy displays, stuffed animals and figurines and things along those lines. And very often, families will come through and they will tell their children, okay, you can choose something. And very often, they have their own money. What I've noticed is that sometimes parents are very thoughtful and have a seat on the bench and allow their children to make very thoughtful decisions, no matter how long it takes. Mm-hmm. But very often, on the other hand, you have parents that hover over them and say, well, come on, hurry up. We need to go now. You know, and they have a lot of body language displaying impatience. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, what are they teaching their children? Because, you know, rushing through, I mean, a toy to these little kids is just as important of a decision as maybe selecting a car for an adult. And they're treating them so rushed, and I'm sure they wouldn't appreciate someone hovering over them. So I'm wondering if you might have a comment about that.
Hmm. I think you've just opened a wonderful area of thought, that if we're going to give the kids this kind of power, we ought to give them the time to make, as you say, those thoughtful decisions and make those comparisons. On the one hand, I could have this. On the other hand, I could have that. If what we think of this task of buying a souvenir is as a delay in the rest of the trip, then it would be better not to have any choice at all.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think that's not sacred space, but it's deeply educational space. And if parents are giving the signal that you ought to make a decision quickly, that might actually be accidentally saying you ought to make impulse decisions later in your life.
Exactly. That was my feeling. Thank you so much.
Very interesting observation.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it, Linda.
Of course, Linda is also a person who's opening up that realm of temptation that Sasha was talking about a minute ago. She's got all these things on her counter hoping that the children will be tempted. So
there you go.
Yep.
Clay and Wausau, it is your turn. Hi, Clay. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I'll keep it short here. I just was, when I was younger, me and my brother used to borrow money from our parents, and we were expected to pay for, you know, all our stuff in high school and things like that. We worked and got our own money, but if we, like, were interested in purchasing a car or something, we would borrow money from mom and dad.
Uh-huh.
I was just kind of curious what you thought about that.
And then did you pay it back? Did you pay it back?
Yeah, we always had to pay it back. You know?
Okay.
It's full, too, because a lot of my friends start out as a loan, and then they just get it gifted. But
You put your finger on exactly what makes it okay. If it's a loan from mom and dad, and there's a clear and neutral expectation, and when I say neutral, I mean not full of Sturm und Drang. I mean you're not yelling about it, you're not nagging about it. There's a clear understanding that this is a loan and that you pay it back, then I'm fine with this idea. If, in fact, a loan is a fuzzy word that kind of turns into a gift and there's no accountability for it, then we've blurred something and we've damaged something that is a vocabulary word that will not work that same way out in the regular world. So I think it's fine to do that, especially for something like a car, because it's expensive. The interest rates for a young person would be quite high. There's a big credit risk there. But as long as loan in a family really means loan and it doesn't get blurred into a kind of an awkward gift where the kid thinks that they've kind of never fully paid it back, the parents start to feel like, well, they can't really count on the young person. And there's this bad feeling about something that you start to feel awkward and strange about.
Mm. Thank you, Clay, for calling. Gary and Rhinelander, on to you now. Hi, Gary.
Hi there. Hey, I'm glad to hear the program again.
Mm-hmm.
What I have done with our children is that making them understand that, like you were saying, that chores such as cleaning the room and such, it's not really a chore, it's just something you had to do, and helping with everyone getting along and getting things done in time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, without that, I didn't pay them for that. But what I did is that I'd give them an allowance, which they understood that it had nothing to do with what they were doing as a whole for the family. And what the allowance was the amount of money per week that they would receive, that if they wanted candy that we did not have, or a toy that they wanted that we were not going to buy, or during school, if they wanted designer clothes in which we were only going to buy them a typical pair of blue jeans, that they would have to, through their allowances, the monies that they saved, would buy these items.
And they'd put in the difference.
And they would put in the difference.
Right.
Right. And one time that my kids asked, you know, I really would like to have this toy. Can I borrow money on next week? And I basically was trying to teach them to spend money within their own means, you know, what they had now.
And save in advance.
And save in advance and trying to teach them that. So that seemed to work very well that way. And, yes, I did give them allowances. There was like 3 years difference in their ages. So, yeah, one got a little bit more than the other, you know, at that time. So.
I like the system, and I like especially the idea that I'll support the basic clothing needs of my child, but if they want extra style or extra glamour, they put in the difference, and then they test how it feels. Is it still worth it to have that fancy jacket when I have to forego some other things in order to have it? That glamorous stuff may start to lose some of its sparkle, you know?
Some of its glamour.
But sometimes they will make the choice, and we need to step out of the way and say,
okay,
this is the child's choice.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I have another comment. You were talking about the magnets that the other host was talking about. And, you know, the comment you'd made about afterwards that, hey, you know, it's not that you get paid for chores or that monetary sort of thing that way, but it's like at the end of the week, Saturdays, hey, we can't spend time doing this because we didn't do this during the week. A sort of a comment is that I've learned the hard way, and I try to teach this to all younger people now with kids, that if you promise your kids something, your time, such as going out fishing or going to the mall together, and do not use that as a punishment. Maybe they got in trouble at school, a chore or something. Don't ever, please, don't ever take your time away from your kids.
Yeah.
I guess I hear what you're saying. I would say that it wouldn't be so much that you would take your time away. It would be that you would spend the child and you together time doing what wasn't done, and you would be doing it differently. So you would still be together, but you would be taking care of unfinished business from the week. But I absolutely hear at the core the heartfelt sense that time with our children is of infinite preciousness. And we only know that deepest when they're in their 20s and 30s, and our time with them is not as precious as it might have been when they were little.
Yeah.
Not to them, that is.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And by the way, you can join in, too. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly with your questions or with your comments as we visit with Connie Kilmark, founder of Kilmark & Associates in Madison, talking budgets, financial constraints, talking with your kids about money. You may have experiences to share or questions. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show, and you can post there. As a matter of fact, Laura posted on the Facebook page, says, my youngest daughter is 20 in her second year of college. When talking about financial issues, she stated the most important thing she's learned is to distinguish between her wants and her needs. I feel this is one of the most important values she can learn. difference between wants and needs.
That's a great comment. And I'll tell you, you cannot implant in somebody else's head the difference between want and need. You can only help them have experiences which clarify for them from within themselves the difference between a want and a need. So our job as parents is often to help create experiences wherein the child discovers that difference. And then we have the common sense not to say, I told you so, if they make a decision, and to keep ourselves out of it so that it's their discovery, it's their wisdom, it's their experiential learning. And it sounds like Laura's daughter has begun to actually get that from within her own life.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Ina in Shell Lake. My 11-year-old daughter is often forgetful in the morning. She will go off to school sometimes forgetting her notebook or her flute or whatever. And if I have to drive back into school to deliver the forgotten item, I charge her $5, which comes in the form of a bill at the end of the month. I wanted her to not only learn to be responsible for getting herself ready, but to also learn the price of what it cost me in gasoline to drive the 12 miles to school and the 12 miles back home. The reason I give her a monthly bill is for impact. Each trip may only cost $5, but the cumulative effect has a larger impact on her. Am I doing the right thing?
I think it's a very interesting gambit. I think that what you're acquainting her with is that a personal assistant actually would cost quite a bit more than $5 a trip. Because I'm looking at the amount of time it takes. You have to not only get in the car, go 12 miles, park the car somewhere, go into the building, register and get a pass, deliver the item. It's sort of pizza pit we deliver, you know? And you're also preserving her from the consequence of being without that item. So I'm thinking that you might want to also experiment with being a little too busy one or two times so that she actually experiences what it's like not to have the item that she forgot in the morning, mm-hmm. which is another way of acquainting her with the price of forgetting.
Ah, that's a good point. We have Joe in Bailey's Harbor up next with a question or comment, and we'll get to him in just a minute. Connie Kilmark, our guest financial counselor and founder of Kilmark & Associates in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking finances today, family finances, budgets, financial constraints, talking with kids about it with our guest Connie Kilmark. Join in at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions, and we're going to go to Joe in Bailey's Harbor now. Joe, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Well, thank you so much. When our daughter was 14 years old, she was very interested in clothes, of course, and she had to have this and she had to have that for because the other kids in school were going to have that season. So just before school started, we gave her the cash mm-hmm. that we would have spent for her school clothes. And we said, you need to make your own choices about what you need and what you want. And it has to include a winter coat because we know you need that. And then that's the end of it until spring when you'll need spring clothes. She was so careful with that money. It was amazing. Again, she knew there wasn't going to be any more clothing money until the spring. And she made very good decisions. And we saw evidence of that as she grew older. She always bought good clothes, but she didn't buy faddish things.
So now I have a question to ask you because I really like what you just said. You gave her the power. You also put a limit. If another parent listening were to try this, the key to what you have said, Joe, is that you somehow made it very clear. You were confident and united in the fact that there would not be more money. If a child thinks that, okay, I have this X number of hundreds of dollars to buy my school clothes with, but if I run out, I can always go back to mom and dad and wheedle and manipulate and kind of convince them. That's the moment in which the value of this lesson rises or falls. If you give in and you say, okay, just this once, I'll get you one more thing or two more things, you've ruined the lesson. it has to really be that limited amount of money, and she has to believe it, and you have to believe it. You have to be sure of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the learning that you gave her is worth more than the clothes she bought.
Because well, we learned early on that be careful what you said, that they had to do or could not do, because you absolutely had to stick with it.
Yes. Yeah. Otherwise, you they don't believe you.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Very good points. Thank you so much for calling.
Larry, we've said the word constraints a number of times, and yeah. I want to be clear. I think there are many things that are happening in our world economy right now that are reason for being politically activated and for being much more tuned in than perhaps we had been in the 80s and 90s. So I'm not for a moment undervaluing the stress that our families are under and the fact that our wages have been falling for many years now. For 30 years, wages have been flat or falling in adjusted for inflation. But what I would like our kids to understand as we take whatever actions we choose to take about all of this is that there is enough, there is enough, there is enough. We have enough. This gets built deeply into them when they're very little. If we transfer to them what we feel is a comparative shortfall of money, they will have that scarcity or that anxiety about there's not enough all the way through their lives. They actually, we may find that we have less than we used to have, but in world terms, we not only have enough, we have enough and some to share and some to go around and some choices. We are, most of us, still relative aristocrats in terms of world populations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important to build that enough sense into our children so that they feel a sense that they can take a chance, that they have security, that they have ground under their feet.
Very good points. And Rodney in Fountain City has some things he wants to bring up with you as well, Connie. So let us go there. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Rodney.
Good morning. I'm enjoying your program very much. I would like you to talk a little bit about philanthropy, and just let me say that my intent this Christmas is to give each of my grandchildren, age 12 and 11, $100. But I'm going to say, you know, I need your help. I would love to give some money to a needy family in your neighborhood, and so I really want you only to take $50 of what I'm giving you. And then if you would take the other $50 and find a needy family who could have a better Christmas because you were able to help them out. So I said, I'm going to say to them, you would be helping me out if you could find a family to give this money to. And I think it perhaps starts that responsibility of giving to other people.
Here's the part of what you've described that I really like. I really like the idea that you're involving them in thinking about those who have needs that they don't have. I like that. I hope that you will say, when you give them the $100, that 50 of it is for them, and 50 of it is in stewardship for a yet-to-be-identified purpose.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of risk in the giving if it's face-to-face and person-to-person, because in the school situation, if one kid has given to another kid's family, there are surprising and sometimes terribly cruel things that happen in the peer culture of young school children based on who has and who doesn't have. So be careful about the fact that giving is a very delicate act. It has to be done with sensitivity for privacy, for discretion, for gracefulness, and maybe it's going to be done anonymously so that they can enjoy the feeling of making it better for somebody without necessarily causing that young child in that family to have an awkward experience about, you know, kind of one kid is the giver and the other kid is the recipient. Do you see kind of what I'm saying, Rodney?
Well, and that would be the intent, and I appreciate that sound advice.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Or, yeah, and sometimes in those instances, local organizations that work mm-hmm. with families that are in need is maybe a way to
go.
You
can get a good deal of buffer that way, but you also lose what I think is a piece of what Rodney's looking for,
yeah.
which is that personal sense of what is life really like for this other family.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
what have I noticed? So there are good and bad points on both. There are arguments on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah in Potosi, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi, my question is that I have three stepkids that live with their mother most of the time and come and stay with me and my husband every other weekend. And I'm wondering if your guest could comment just how to teach those kids responsibility with money when we're not the only ones teaching, and maybe the habits that they're learning aren't
right.
the best.
I think this is one of the most challenging situations, Sarah, and I appreciate it. I actually expected a call like this earlier in the show because this is just so hard, and there are so many what we call blended families. You really have two completely different structures going on. They're living in parallel universes. You can't correct for or comment on successfully whatever's going on in that other household. What you can do is create a coherent, reasonably sensible understanding of the way we do it in this household. And you're in a sensitive position because you're the newcomer to the system. There's a biological dad in your house, and then there's you, who is dad's wife. And then there is the other household where there's both more time and there's more connection. So it's good to have a relatively modest expectation of how much influence you will have. And perhaps think of yourself as an aunt or an older cousin as opposed to a parental figure. Even though I know that sometimes in terms of the way the household runs, you'll be parental. But espousing the values that you have out loud, simply saying this is what we believe, and letting the results of how that how you live your lives when they are there speak for itself. I think that's the best that you can hope for. I think that you can't hope to supersede what you may not approve of in the other family.
Mm. Thank you.
Say more.
We had a little breakdown in our phone system, so we lost our calls, but we'll get them back, and I'll give that number, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. We have Tanya in Winona, Minnesota, who was on standby waiting, whose son lost his watch, and she's wondering... does he have to earn it back?
This goes to the question of how children take care of things. If it just appears from the sky, it's one thing. But if it's something that he cares a lot about and it came as a gift and now it's gone, I think there could be some value in at least participating in earning it back. If not the whole cost, at least some of the cost.
You know, she's here. I think we've got her back. So let's go back. Tanya, are you there?
I am.
Oh, good. Let's hear the story.
Well, the story is my son is 8.
Yeah.
And this was a gift to him. It was a birthday gift. And it was a beloved Mickey Mouse watch that he wore about 2 weeks, and he lost it once school started.
Mm.
And he kind of lacks, in general, some personal responsibility. You know, like he's the kid who can never find his mittens, and he's very forgetful.
Sort of scattered.
Yeah, he's very scattered.
Mm-hmm.
And so he lost this as kind of a pattern of how his life goes. And we decided as a family that the money that he's earned from chores and allowance, that maybe he should buy that back. But now I'm kind of feeling like, you know, it was a gift. If I had bought him this watch and it had broken right away, I would have replaced it for him. So am I doing the wrong thing having him earn it back?
Tanya, don't you think that losing something is different from it malfunctioned?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. In the one case, the manufacturer created a flawed product and it broke. You know, if it wasn't because he smacked it against the lockers, you know, it malfunctioned. So you're looking for satisfaction from the manufacturer. That's one thing. And I think that's good to teach kids. But in the other case, there needs to be a consequence, a gentle one that's neutral. No scolding, just the reality is that if you want that same watch again, we need to find a way to make that happen. So I like the idea of his participating in the money to make it happen, and not right away. Make it slow. Make it take some time. Now, for an 8-year-old, time is different from us. So yeah. 2 or 3 weeks or a month or two is very long.
Yeah.
Okay. But it can't be immediate. There has to be some time so that he can kind of get what he's doing.
Okay, mm-hmm. But he doesn't earn a whole lot of money.
Right.
Doing his allowance is not much, so he probably has already been.
Well, you can
quite a while.
You can match it, you know, 4-1, 3-1, but as long as he participates.
Yep, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, Tonya. Connie Kilmark, financial counselor and founder of Kilmark & Associates in Madison. Our guest, she'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking budgets, financial constraints, talking with our kids about budgets and finances with Connie Kilmark, financial counselor and founder of Kilmark & Associates in Madison. She's been a regular on the show for a long time. It's great to have her back, and thank you so much for listening in. Questions, call us at 800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show if you want to post a comment there. Robin in Adams, Wisconsin. Up next, Robin, hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I had heard earlier discussion on wants and needs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is more important. I'm the mother of 5 grown sons, and I work with an agency that assists low-income families. What
yes.
I've found is that not only within my children, but for many young people, there is something that I like to call priority deficit disorder.
That's good.
So it's important to learn early the difference between what we need and what we want. And I'll take any comments off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
You know, Robin, if we had never invented consumer credit, it would be so much easier to learn the difference between want and need. Because let's say that you made a $200 a week salary back in the 30s or the 20s or whenever it was that you were making such a thing, and before we had the widespread use of consumer credit. If you spent the money unwisely, and this was part of the reason we even had the Volstead Act, because there were men who were drinking their paychecks and there was no money for the rent. And the women were rightly peeved about this kind of behavior. So, you know, what led to prohibition was not entirely stupid. It was real family hardship,
yeah.
Also spousal violence, that kind of thing. They were very clear on needs versus wants. If, in fact, you had $200 and you didn't have a disorder like alcoholism or drug addiction and you spent it unwisely, you would bump into the consequence of that behavior or that choice immediately. You would immediately not be able to pay the rent or buy groceries. The trouble is that what we've done is we've created this whole system whereby you can still access those goods through the use of a credit card without becoming acquainted with the fact that you've put wants before needs, because you can have both for quite a long time. And by the time the credit card balances get out of whack, you can't tell what set of decisions over the last 5 or 8 years it was that caused you suddenly now to have $30,000 or $40,000 or $70,000 in credit card debt, because each of the decisions that were accumulated in those cards were so innocent and small and ordinary. The balances that you see on those cards are so much larger than any of the decisions that you can ever remember having made, that there's a vast disconnect both over time and in quantity between what you know your behavior to have been and what you're looking at in these credit card balances. So we've cushioned people from learning wants versus needs a bit in a way that I think we're going to unlearn in this new era of everyone wanting to kind of pay down their debt and get back into real-time spending, spending only what you have and really feeling exposed, because when you have debt, you belong to other people. You have a leash around your neck that belongs to the lender.
Yeah. Lisa in Jackson, on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. And actually, I just thought of something with the comments you were making earlier. I tell people I don't use credit cards anymore because I say I'm still paying for a cheeseburger I ate 10 years ago.
There you go. I hope you really enjoyed that cheeseburger.
It wasn't that great.
It wasn't 10 years of great, huh?
No, it hasn't gotten better in time, unfortunately. So it keeps me on the straight and narrow. Something I saw when I was a cashier at a grocery store, I would often see mothers with their small children, and they're paying with debit cards or credit cards, and they would let the kids swipe the card. Mm. And to me, that kind of disturbed me on a really deep level, because to me, they were just saying, look at the magic card, mm-hmm. and now we get to take our stuff home. There was never a discussion. There was never a handing over of actual physical money. And that kind of, to me, set a bad, example for the child.
It's a very good point. So from a tiny child's point of view, what happens? You get to the canyon of the, the place where you pay in the grocery store, and you hand over this rectangle of plastic. So the person does something with it, and they give it back to you intact. They don't cut off a piece of it. There doesn't seem to be an apparent exchange, because everything that's happening is so profoundly abstract that I would venture to say many, if not most, adults don't even know what's actually happening. So what the child sees is not an exchange. So I do like the idea of making sure that they know that we give something in order to get something. And then that money that we gave isn't available again to do something else with, because we already gave it for the groceries in our refrigerator. So I'm glad you brought that up, because we live in such an abstract financial world now.
Thank you very much for calling. Speaking of, a 2.5-year-old, we have Sam and Madison emailing about a 2.5-year-old child of theirs. Do you recommend an appropriate age to begin an allowance? Would a 2.5-year-old get an allowance, or what?
A 2.5-year-old is already decoding money. I would say a very small amount, maybe a quarter or 50 cents, and maybe, and I think it's a little young. I'm trying to find a way in which a 2.5-year-old would have a concept of time, because you see, when you're teaching about money, you're also teaching about the nature of time. You're dealing with a certain amount for a certain length of time for certain things.
Yes.
And a 2.5-year-old is still living in a very much a now kind of thing. So getting to the end of a day might be waiting a very long time for a 2.5-year-old. So I would work instead on that with that 2.5-year-old. I would work on the notion of deferring gratification so that they are building their capacity for patience. And then you say, in about an hour and a half, we can go and do that, or you can have the cookies and milk, or whatever it is that you're trying to get them to wait a little bit for. Because the capacity to contain yourself and believe that if you wait, something really good will happen as a result of your waiting is a part of a money lesson that isn't directly affected or directly in dealing with the cash, but it's dealing with a component that's going to be as important, if not more important, when cash enters and money enters. So that's what I'd work on with a 2.5-year-old.
Lael in Madison up next with a comment or question. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hi, Connie, it's Lael.
Oh, hi, Lael.
Wonderful show. So my question is how my children are lucky enough to be gifted over the holidays, typically like a $100 check. And so what I'm struggling with is how to help, a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old with the concept of how to
deal with this money or use this money. And what you were just talking about, the concept of time and money being connected, because I feel like they both have this feeling like, well, oh, you know, now it's been a couple years, I have $200, so I can get whatever I want whenever I want. And just helping them kind of understand, first of all, how much money that is, especially for a child, and then to make, you know, conscious decision-making about how to spend the money other than, well, I have so much money, I can just buy that toy, it doesn't matter. I can buy that toy, it doesn't matter because I have the money.
Well, you have a couple of things here. You have, does the money really belong to them? And I'm not saying answer the question, I'm just raising the issue. If a large sum, and that's a large sum for a six-year-old, if a large sum comes into a child's life, maybe from a grandparent or some other relative, you have to make a decision in your own mind about whether you believe that money genuinely belongs to them. And if it does, then there has to be some way in which they become acquainted with its size and what it has the power to do. If what you want to do is allow some of it for them and put some of it into something that you might think of as maybe a college fund or something like that, it would be very important for you not to say, this is yours, but I'm going to trump you and cause you to save some of this for college. I would almost rather that they didn't know there was $100, that there was instead $50 that's genuinely theirs, and some of it you diverted simply because they're too young to be aware. So I'm saying this to the general audience. The second thing is that if it's genuinely theirs, you might start to help them understand that $100 equals, and then get some pictures so that they can see, so that they can get what $100 equals in tangible form. Because the abstraction of money is absolutely too weird. I mean, it's amazing to me that there are so many of us as adults that can actually handle how abstract and symbolic money is. So if you're going to do it with the kids, give them some equivalences that are tangible so that they get the sense that it equals one of these or two of those, but it doesn't equal two of those, one of these, and four of those, so that they don't have a sense that the $100 is what many of us as adults might think of as $1 million. You know, it should be enough for everything in the world. It isn't. All money is finite, and it's helpful to them to see equivalences.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Thank you very much for calling. And Jack in Delavan, we are on to you now. Hi, Jack. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I came in late on this program, and I want to thank you for it. I just had a thought about something that was discussed a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're doing things for children at Christmas and you want them to share either or things like that, to give them choices and to involve them more. For instance, if you talk about who could we share this with, like I come from Kenosha. In Kenosha we have Women's Horizons. We have the Shalom Center.
Mm-hmm.
We have a circle of friends at our church where we give gifts to needy families.
Mm-hmm.
But to give them that or even let them go on the internet and begin to look up some of these things and then together to discuss them, to give them more choice as to where this is going and get them involved in that choice, I think means even a little more, as well as I think President and Mrs. Obama do a wonderful thing at Thanksgiving when they always go, you know, to a place where food is being dispensed and they have their daughters with them. To see that or to go to a place, for instance, like that, not only to share food, but maybe even then to sit down and have a meal and relate to these people that you're serving, supposedly, but then sit and eat and share food with them as an equal is a wonderful experience.
I agree with everything that you've said. I think that giving kids experience in philanthropy so that, remember, philanthropy comes from Greek words that say love of mankind. And there is no reason why every single one of us cannot be a philanthropist. You don't need to be wealthy. If your child has too many stuffed animals, some of those could be given to the police department to comfort a child in a stressful situation at a fire or in a family violence situation. A very young child can be a philanthropist, and giving them the power of considering, imaginatively inhabiting what the need might be that they could help to fill does two things. it causes a bit of a need to be filled, but it causes that child to have the sense that they not only have enough, they have some to share, and they prove that they still have enough by cutting off a slice of what they have and exporting it to someone else who has less. And yet there's enough. This is kind of a loaves and fishes kind of lesson, if you know what I mean. There's a sense in which the enoughness is it lives in us differently when we do this sharing, which is partly for our own deepest mental and social health. So it is necessary to do giving in order to feel okay in the world. If all we do is barricade ourselves and try to save everything that we have, we live in a world of danger and scarcity. Believe it or not, there's more of enough when you give some of it away.
Thank you very much for calling, Jack. Gina emailed and wondered if you have any advice for establishing credit at the age of 18.
Well, it's old enough. I would hope that the lessons of the earlier family would have been well planted. I would have, if the kid's going to get a credit card, I would certainly put a very low credit limit. I would make sure that they understand that if they make the charge, it's their obligation. And here's a matter where they're going to be affecting a credit score. And the credit score lives almost eternally. I mean, there's just something so astonishing about the consequences of one's decisions once a credit score is involved. And the credit score now is used for everything from jobs to insurance policies to the rates on loans and house buying and such. So I would really make sure that they know what they're getting into and the consequences. But then again, you know, they may have to learn the hard way. And if that's the case, I wouldn't so much get upset as I would say, do you think maybe it might be a good idea to close this if you're not handling it well so that we can sort of stop the bleeding here?
Yeah, good points.
So,
and we had a Facebook question from Sharon. How do you feel about kids working well in high school and college?
As long as they're very clear about priorities. Remember the nice person who said there's such a thing as priority deficit disorder. The priority of education is education. So a part-time job is fine as long as you see that they're prioritizing study and doing as well as they want to ask themselves to do and that you expect of them. And then the money that they earn has to be theirs. But it would be helpful if you help them structure what is it for. Is it to blow on Friday night or is it for actually paying some expenses? So I would urge that it not interfere with study, but it could help organize time because sometimes kids do a better job of organizing themselves when they're busy as opposed to when they have all the time in the world until they have no time. So sometimes it can help.
It's the old saying, if you want to ask a busy person
if you want something done,
ask somebody who's busy.
Yeah, there you go.
Dwayne in Onalaska, thank you for calling. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. What I got, I have two daughters. My 11-year-old daughter, we come up with a concept, and I'll tell you where it come from. I don't pay her an allowance because the way I look at it, when you're an adult, nobody's going to pay you an allowance. So what I came up with was a commission-based system. So we both sat down, and then we calculated all the jobs in the house, unloading the dishwasher, folding the clothes, you know, taking out the trash. Okay, so we got our list. These are her responsibilities. And then I put a monetary amount for each job. Say, for instance, if you fold a load of clothes, that's 50 cents. If there's three loads, you get $1.50. Unloading the dishwasher, you know, everything, and we agreed on all of that. So on a weekly basis, she does the jobs. If I see they were all done correctly and can vouch that she did them, then I pay her. I total up what the total is, and that's what she gets paid. That way, if she would, as an adult, happen to be in sales, a lot of sales jobs are commission-driven. So that way, I'm teaching her something that she will already be familiar with, that she may come in contact with as an adult. I guess I just wanted your opinion of what you think of our setup.
Well, I can kind of live with it because you're not saying you have to do these things. You're saying here are some earning opportunities.
Yes, here they are.
And the very important part of this that I hope you're carrying out is that it has to be neutral. If she chooses to do it, she can have some income. If she doesn't choose to do it, she doesn't have some income, but you don't yell at her as a result of not doing these things. That's the key to making this okay, so that you keep the money and the doing of things in a neutral plane. It's not I love you more or I love you less or I'm angry at you or I'm appreciative of you.
No, it's not treated that way.
Right.
No.
And it's no big deal. If you unload the dishwasher, then the money, there's no financial thing for her. But if she chooses to do it, then she's choosing to show initiative, which I think is what you're trying to emphasize here.
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Had you heard of that before?
It's not so much paying for chores as it's opening opportunities. And earlier in the show, I'm glad that you're bringing this up. Earlier in the show, I would have liked to say, and I'll say it now, I don't have any problem with paying for extra work jobs. And what you've done is create basic chores, which you consider to be extra opportunities for her. They're not the basic mandatory things you expect. They're, in a sense, optional. If the chores are optional, you can clean out the garage and make extra money for your prom. That's fine with me. I have no problem with that. It's the normal basic task.
Brushing your teeth or whatever. Things
that are really, really basic. That's where I have a hard time.
The tough thing with us is we live in a city.
Yep.
And my wife and I were both born and raised on farms.
Mm-hmm.
We were farm kids.
Yep.
And it's hard. You know, my wife and I have a total different background than, quote, town people, you know.
And your kids are town people.
And they're town people.
Yep.
They're going to be raised as town people.
Yes.
We weren't.
Yes.
So it's tough because, I mean, stuff I was doing at 8, 9, 10 years
I
old
know.
On a farm
yeah.
is entirely different than what an 8 or 9 year old was doing in town, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was driving tractors at 9 years old. I was feeding livestock. I was multiple jobs, you know.
It would be very hard for you to produce that effect in a town. It really was dependent on the landscape in which you were growing up. You were part of a family business.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Duane. Mary in Campbellsport, do you have a quick comment or question?
Yes, I'm enjoying this show in many ways, and especially the comment on wants and needs that takes me back to when I was raising one of my sons, who's now 44, and when he was a grade school child, once he commented, and this always stays with me, he said, I have everything I need, but not what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And my comment to him was, oh, you're so lucky. And this is bringing that all back, this conversation.
Mm-hmm. The miracle of enough is something that we don't notice very often, and I think we would do best to notice it a lot more often.
Absolutely. Mary, that's kind of a great way to end, isn't it? Connie, it's been wonderful. Boy, the time just flew.
I had such a good time, Larry. I love visiting with our listeners.
Oh, we have a great group of people listening. And Connie Kilmark's great, too. She's a financial counselor and founder of Kilmark & Associates in Madison. And she comes by every so often to talk about these kinds of issues. And boy, it's just fascinating conversation, isn't it?
It is.
I loved it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And she will be back. I can promise you that. And we will have a show tomorrow. I can promise you that as well. And I'm pretty sure we'll have a Garden Talk show at 11 o'clock. And I'm pretty sure that certified arborist Bruce Allison will be our guest. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.